It must have been about 6 weeks later when Mr. Partridge came in again. He looked tense. I'd like you to have a look at Percy again, Mr. Herriot. I lifted the dog onto the surgery table, and I didn't need to examine him very closely. It's quite a lot bigger, I'm afraid. I looked across the table at the little man. Yes, I know. He hesitated. What do you suggest? Oh, there's no doubt at all. He'll have to come in for an operation. That thing must come off. Horror and despair flickered behind the thick spectacles. An operation! He leant on the table with both hands. I hate the idea. I just can't bear the thought of it. I smiled reassuringly. Look, I know how you feel, but honestly, there's nothing to worry about. As I told you before, it's quite a simple procedure. Oh, I know. I know, he moaned. But I don't want him to be caught about, you understand? It's just the idea of it. And I couldn't persuade him. He remained adamant and marched resolutely from the surgery with his pet. I watched him crossing the road to his house, and I knew he had let himself in for a load of worry. But I didn't realize just how bad it was going to be. It was to be a kind of martyrdom.
Chapter 26.
I do not think martyrdom is too strong a word for what Mr. Partridge went through over the next few weeks. Because with the passage of time, that testicle became more and more massive. And due to the way Percy carried his tail, the thing was lamentably conspicuous. People used to turn and stare as man and dog made their way down the street, Percy trotting bravely, his master eyes rigidly to the front, putting up a magnificent pretense of being quite unaware of anything unusual. It really hurt me to see them, and I found the sight of the smart little dog's disfigurement particularly hard to bear. Mr. Partridge's superior facade had always made him a natural target for a certain amount of leg-pulling which he bore stoically, but the fact that it now involved his pet pierced him to the soul. One afternoon he brought him over to the surgery, and I could see that the little man was almost in tears. Gloomily I examined the offending organ, which was now about 6 inches long, gross, pendulous, undeniably ludicrous. "You know, Mr. Herriot," the artist gasped, "some boys chalked on my window, 'Roll up and see the famous Chinese dog, Wan Hong Lo.' I've just been wiping it off." I rubbed my chin. "Well, that's an ancient joke, Mr. Partridge. I shouldn't worry about that. But I do worry. I can't sleep because of the thing." "For heaven's sake, then, why don't you let me operate? I could put the whole business right for you." "No, no, I can't do that." His head rolled on his shoulders. He was the very picture of misery as he stared at me. "I'm frightened, that's what it is. I'm frightened he'll die under the anaesthetic." "Oh, come now, he's a strong little animal. There's no reason at all for such fears." "But there is a risk, isn't there?" I looked at him helplessly. "Well, there's a slight risk in all operations if you come right down to it, but honestly, in this case..." "No, that's enough. I won't hear of it," he burst out, and seizing Percy's lead, he strode away. Things went from bad to worse after that. The tumour grew steadily, easily visible now from my vantage point in the surgery window as the dog went by on the other side of the street, and I could see, too, that the stares and occasional ridicule were beginning to tell on Mr. Partridge. His cheeks had hollowed, and he had lost some of his high colour. But I didn't have words with him until one market day several weeks later. It was early afternoon, the time the farmers often came in to pay their bills. I was showing one of them out when I saw Percy and his master coming out of the house. And I noticed immediately that the little animal now had to swing one leg slightly to clear the massive obstruction. On an impulse, I called out and beckoned to Mr. Partridge. "Look," I said as he came across to me, "you've just got to let me take that thing off. It's interfering with his walking, making him lame. He can't go on like this." The artist didn't say anything but stared back at me with hunted eyes. We were standing there in silence when Bill Dalton came round the corner and marched up to the surgery steps, checkbook in hand. Bill was a large, beefy farmer who spent most of his market day in the bar of the Black Swan, and he was preceded by an almost palpable wave of beer fumes.
"Now then, rolling lad, how is that?"
he roared, slapping the little man violently on the back. "I am quite well, William, thank you. And how are you?" But Bill didn't answer. His attention was all on Percy, who had strolled a few paces along the pavement. He watched him intently for a few moments, then, repressing a giggle, he turned back to Mr. Partridge with a mock, serious expression.
"Hello, Rowley,"
he said.
"That bloodhound of yours reminds me of the young man of Devizes whose balls were of different sizes. The one was so small it was no ball at all, but the t'other one won several prizes."
He finished with a shout of laughter which went on and on till he collapsed weakly against the iron railings. For a moment I thought Mr. Partridge was going to strike him. He glared up at the big man, and his chin and mouth trembled with rage. Then he seemed to gain control of himself, and he turned to me. "Can I have a word with you, Mr. Herriot?" "Certainly." I walked a few yards with him down the street. "You're right," he said. "Percy will have to have that operation." "When can you do him?" "Tomorrow," I replied. "Don't give him any more food, and bring him in at 2 in the afternoon."